good afternoon and welcome into another hour. Well, actually, not an hour. You figure it up, it's like 47 and a half minutes or something like that. It's always a... anyway, well, welcome into another edition of Woods and Water, South Carolina. Sometimes I like the rabbit trail to my own detriment. But I hope you're having a good one. Boy, a little lower humidity makes a whole lot of difference out there, doesn't it? It's kind of nice, like a refreshing, you know, before the storm of August and the dog days of summer, which are coming. They come every year. But, you know, you enjoy what you get when you get it. And the outdoors is always there. Hot, cold, wet, dry. Look, we have enough. You got clothes out there for every condition. You got well, these roto-molded coolers that'll keep ice for 5 days. So, you know, you can keep drinks going, keep yourself hydrated. It's just a matter of do you want to take the time to get out there? There's a story. I think I actually did this in 2016 because it's from March 25th to 2016. It's a story about children spending less time outside than prison inmates. And I'll get to that. So that may give you a little bit of your parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, whoever. I'll pull up another oldie goldie to go along with that one that's kind of funny. There's a new study out with links between ADHD and digital media. Picked up a little something there. Yeah, got a calendar of events. Got a little deer hunting things for you if you're getting ready to put your stands up and that sort of thing that'll help you out. Got a little news on coyotes. And, of course, got a calendar. And also, I had a chance to talk to Brandon Cobb this week. Brandon finished 12th in Angler of the Year points on the FLW Tour. He's going to head to Lake Wachita and Honeyer Hot Springs, Arkansas, for his fourth cup appearance in 5 years as a professional angler. So we talk a little bit of fishing. I forget what else we talked about. But anyway, that's going to run second and third segments of the show. And it's always a good time when I catch up with Brandon. Just a great guy. Except we have a hard time catching bass when we go fishing together. We catch a few, but we almost catch bigger crappie than we do bass, which is another story in and of itself. But so let's get started. Yeah, children spend less time outside than prison inmates. This is a story from March 25th, 2016. I don't know if Catherine Martinko is the original author of this or not, but here goes. Prisoners at a maximum security facility in the U.S. are guaranteed 2 hours of outdoor time daily, whereas one out of two kids worldwide spends less than an hour outside. Children spend less time outside each day than prison inmates do in the United States. Inmates are guaranteed 2 hours of outdoor time daily, whereas one in two children is outside for less than an hour. A recent survey of 12,000 parents in 10 countries who have children aged 5 to 12 found that one-third of kids spend under 30 minutes outside each day. A new short film, and it gives a link here on YouTube, reveals how important it is for inmates to have their outdoor time on a daily basis and how surprised they are to learn that kids get even less. The inmates who live at the Wabash Valley Correctional Institute, a maximum security facility in Indiana, describe daily outdoor time as probably the most important part of the day. It's an opportunity to take all the frustration and all your problems and just leave them out there. Keeps my mind right, keeps my body strong. When asked by the filmmaker how they would respond if their yard time were reduced to just 1 hour a day, the inmates were horrified at the suggestion. I think that's going to build more anger. That would be torture. One guard said it would be potentially disastrous. Shock and disbelief is registers clearly on the inmates' faces when they learn that children are given less outdoor time than they. Wow, that is really depressing, one says. Initial survey was conducted by Londrabands OMO and Persil, which, upon realizing how dire the situation is for children, launched a new campaign called Dirt is Good, Free the Children. UK-based campaign is headed by Sir Ken Robinson, known for his work in the area of creativity and innovation in education, and Dr. Stuart Brown, head of the National Institute of Play. Parents can share their views on the importance of play and sign up. Let's see here now. The new survey reiterates what we've been hearing from many different sources, that kids are spending far too much time in the house watching screens instead of engaging in free play outdoors, using their imagination and getting dirty. Outdoor time should be thought of as a right possessed by children, not something that is limited, those whose parents have the time, resources, or inclination to take them out. Schools and governments need to get involved to ensure this happens. Yeah, maybe. It's just unfortunate that it takes a comparison to prison inmates to make us realize how little access to nature the world's children are getting. In the words of one Wabash security guard, this is great, if you don't have to throw the kids in the bathtub, they haven't played hard enough. I thoroughly agree. And then, since I got that one, another one popped up in my head that that just goes hand in hand with, I think, spending time outdoors. And this is from May the 14th, 2015. Kevin McSpadden. It's from a Time Health piece that goes, the average attention span for the notoriously ill-focused goldfish is 9 seconds. But according to a new study from Microsoft Corporation, people now generally lose concentration after 8 seconds, highlighting the effects of an increasingly digitalized lifestyle on the brain. Research in Canada surveyed 2,000 participants and studied the brain activity of 112 others using EEGs. I'm not going to, electroencephalograms. There we go. Junior English comes back sounding things out. Microsoft found that since the year 2000, or about when the mobile revolution began, the average attention span dropped from 12 seconds to 8 seconds. Heavy multi-screeners find it difficult to filter out irrelevant stimuli. They're more easily distracted by multiple streams of media, the report said. On the positive side, the report says our ability to multitask has drastically improved in the mobile age. Sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes not. Microsoft theorized that the changes were a result of the brain's ability to adapt and change itself over time, and a weaker attention span may be a side effect of evolving to a mobile internet. Jeez. This is true. The survey also confirmed generational differences for mobile users. For example, 77% of people aged to 24 responded yes when asked the question, when nothing is occupying my attention, the first thing I do is reach for my phone. That's the truth. That I'm guilty too, compared with only 10% of those over age 65. And now congratulate yourself for concentrating long enough to make it through this article. Ah, yes, the mobile age, the digital age. It's not such a bad thing, I don't guess sometimes. Okay, all right, the calendar of events brought to you by Visit Anderson and Green Pine Landing and Event Center. Again, this is just a place to start, peaks, people. You know, it's the stuff's out there for you. Family fishing clinics. Have you ever been fishing, or has it been a long time since you wet your line? If you're intimidated by how to tie a palomar knot or proper casting techniques for all situations, then we have a class for you. Family fishing clinics is an introductory class to fishing. Teach skills on how to tie fishing knots, how to rig a rod and reel, casting, and the best part is everyone will get to try their hands at fishing. Kids from ages 4 to adults are welcome, so come out and play, enjoy the outdoors, and make this a family fun day. This is from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, their Family Fishing Clinics program. A couple of them coming up July the 21st at Table. Whoop, that one's full. Sorry. Santee State Park, August the 1st. It is not full. 9 a.m. to 12:30. So there's a few more on in August, but yeah, the one up here at Table Rock and Pickens is full. I just saw that. So August 1st, Santee State Park. Pre-registration is required. You can do that on the Department of Natural Resources webpage. From the South Carolina State Park in my hometown, twilight paddling at Chester State Park. Experience outdoor adventure like never before with a ranger-guided twilight boat tour of Chester State Park Lake. From the historical boathouse to the new bridge and all that's in between, borrow a park canoe and bring your own. Life jackets provided with park boats, $25 a person. Age 16 and up, under 18 must be accompanied by an adult. Space is limited. Call the park to register for the event. This is July the 27th, 8 to 9:30. And, you know, headlamp, hands-free light, water, bug spray, weather-appropriate clothing, and the hat. Another one from the South Carolina State Park website, Table Rock State Park. I'm having trouble pronouncing things today. The third Friday stand-up paddleboard and kayak paddling tryouts. July the 20th, 11 a.m. to 3 o'clock. Start your weekend by trying out a kayak or stand-up paddleboard on Peaceful Lake Illinois at Table Rock State Park. Learn basic paddling techniques, improve your balance. That would be for those stand-up paddleboarder people. And try out a variety of boats during this program. There's a fail out there on paddleboarders. I just happened to think of that. It's the third Friday of every month, May through October. All boats, safety equipment, and paddles will be available on site. So, registration is 3 days prior to the event. So, on July 17th, you need to be registered for this event at Table Rock State Park. Down in Columbia, this is always something I enjoy in the summertime, is the Purple Martins. If you don't know about Purple Martins and want to learn more, you can go on a Purple Martin boat tour. Join WingGuard's naturalist and U.S. Coast Guard Captain Zach to experience a once-in-a-lifetime viewing of Purple Martins in one of the North America's largest Purple Martin roosts. During summer evenings, hundreds of thousands of Purple Martins travel to the 12-acre Doolittle Island on Lake Murray to nest. Do you know how it got the name? Because it's called Bomb Island, because that's where they practiced bombing when they trained at Columbia Airport during World War II. It's a sunset cruise where you can see thousands of Purple Martins up close and enjoy time on Lake Murray. Get a hold of Purple Martin Boat Tours on Lake Murray. Back with Brandon Cobb and our conversation for this week, and I got a whole bunch of stuff to wrap up the show. So hang on through the break. More Woods and Water South Carolina coming up.
I've got a bite.
Dawn to midday to dusk, the sun's rays dance across the water and the sparkling light beckons. The abundant shorelines invite you to play or sail or simply behold. This is where champions fish and families gather to unwind. It's Lake Hartwell, and Anderson is the gateway to its wonders. Walk on a pier, float all day, and restore your soul in this beautiful oasis. Visit Anderson, South Carolina's bright spot. Discover more at visitanderson.com and visitlakehartwell.com.
It's always fun to catch up to him. I see him around a little bit. I only saw him on the water once this year at Lake Lanier, but we just spent a little short bit of time together at ICAST. He's busy going back and forth to these big sponsors. He's got paying his bills now, so... But it's always fun to have Brandon Cobb back on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Thanks for taking a few minutes with us, buddy.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Are you like us? I mean, ICAST, you kind of look forward to it all year long because you see people you don't see, but maybe once or twice a year. But, man, by Thursday morning, you're ready for it to be over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm definitely – I ended up staying until Friday this year, and I was definitely ready to go Thursday. But I enjoy it. It's a, the first time I ever went. It's a, probably the coolest thing I've ever been to.
Yep.
But now as I've been to more and more, I've seen it now. So it gets – I enjoy it, but I'm ready to get home.
Yep. I think everybody's that way. I think everybody's ready to get there, and everybody's ready to go home by Thursday.
That's right. Yeah, and now when running around the booth and everything,
oh, yeah.
I don't even think I got to see half the new baits. So
no.
I didn't really get to enjoy it.
Let's see. You were – I saw you at TH. I saw you at ARC. Saw you at Yozuri. Where else would you have been?
I went to Lowrance
okay.
for a little while and just stopped by a few others where I've got friends at. So.
Yep. How's the ARC deal? How's Louie and the ARC Rods thing going?
Our rods is really picking up. We actually, at ICAST, we released a couple new models of rods, but, or not models, but actions.
Okay.
And we also released actually ARC tungsten.
Ah.
Now making tungsten weights.
Is it like still $6 for an ounce?
They're expensive. I mean, it's just tungsten prices, but they're actually much cheaper than other tungsten weights.
Okay.
The, just an example, like a normal 2 ounce weight's about $15 and our 2 ounce weights are $9.99.
Okay.
They're still tungsten prices, but they're better. And they're cool because they actually have the size of the weight imprinted on the side, so you don't have to sit there and
mix
your weights up and you have no idea what they are.
You know, speaking of weights and tungsten weights, I was up on Lake, it'd been Lyman Lake, a little small 500-acre Lyman Lake, and they actually had floating mats up there.
Really?
It was some kind of yellow. I don't know if it's quite floating. It had some stuff coming up from the ground. But it was like a yellow flower. But a bunch of holes in it. I actually went out there and started punching. I actually got one bite. I missed him. But it was like one of those you're not expecting it. And, you know, when they hit that stuff in the grass, it's like jerks a rod out of your hand. I was not ready for him. But it was funny. And, you know, punching in South Carolina, it was you know, odd experience.
That's very cool. Yeah, there's not many places around here to do that. Santee has a few tight places up in the swamp area, but for the most part, we don't get to punch much around here. I know when I go to a lake where that's the way to catch them is punching, I'm always pretty rusty when I here in practice. I'll miss about every other one that bites.
And how can you miss a fish that hits that hard? I just don't understand it.
I don't understand. And I think part of our problem punching is when you want to, there's in that thick stuff, you want to just rear back into them as hard as you can.
Yeah.
And you have to get the fish out quick, but you're actually better off with not a super violent hook set, more of a a sweep pull into them and not a sharp hook set, because when you got 10 foot of 65-pound braid out, there's no stretch. So you kind of something gives, whether it's their mouth or the hook bends a little bit or something if you get too heavy into them.
Or the rod snap.
That's right, or the rod. Now I don't have. That's one thing with Arc Rods. They're a Florida-based company, so my flipping rod I don't have to worry about.
Okay.
Randall Tharp designed it, so it's made to
like a telephone pole.
Yeah.
Oh man, last year, pretty good year. You never finished in the triple digits, which is always good.
Right.
And it came out 12th. I mean, you know, Florida was up and down, an 83rd and a 27 on Florida Lake. So, you know, average, what, 50 or so? Lanier was 26, Cumberland 74, Smith 79, Kentucky 15th, St. Clair 44, 12th in the points. Pretty good year. Did any one of those lakes, like, get away from you, or did any of them surprise you?
Yeah, well, I actually, you know, I always don't do well at Okeechobee. It's
no,
not in my
you don't.
Forte. But I actually found some fish at Okeechobee this year, and I had two areas with fish, and I couldn't decide which one to go to the first day. And I went to one and got hung up in it and had, like, 8 pounds. And the second day, obviously, I wasn't going back to that one.
No.
So I went to the other one, and I had almost, I don't remember exactly, but somewhere 16, 17 pounds.
Ah.
And if I just went there the first day. So I actually found some fish at Okeechobee this year, so I kind of made some bad decisions in that one. And then the other two, Cumberland and Smith, that's actually, compared to what me and you are used to around here, that's the two that I should have done well at.
Right.
And just didn't. Cumberland was execution a little bit. I just lost some fish there. But Smith, I don't know what happened. I enjoy fishing Smith. I just couldn't catch any big ones. Caught a bunch of fish, just small ones.
Yeah. Well, so I mean,
it was overall year was, it was a good year. I never had any highlight reel tournaments, but never did poorly either. So
yeah, and that's good. I mean, the year is making money, making the cut, making the cup.
That's right. Yeah, the cup's always the ultimate goal, and it's definitely I want to get up there higher in points eventually. Like I've had better and better years. I think I was actually 12th last year too, finished the same place in points 2 years in a row. But
yeah.
Definitely want to have a chance at Angler of the Year and things. But you really have to get a check in every tournament and throw a few top tens in to have a chance at that. So.
Yeah. Going back to Ouachita, this is your fourth cup in five years,
my fourth
I think.
Cup. Yep, fourth cup in 5 years. That's right.
What a record.
Yeah, it's been good so far. I've been pretty consistent. I'm still lacking those other than the cups, which I've done well in. I'm still figuring out how to close tournaments, but it's been good. I've been consistent.
Yep. And there's a lot to be said for that too. Especially on a big stage like the
definitely
Cup.
Tough.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean,
yeah, it's tough. And with just our diversity of lakes, too.
Oh, yeah.
You very rarely are you ever doing even remotely the same type fishing at two different places. So.
That's exactly. They're all so different. Also different.
They are. Yeah, that's right.
All right. I have to ask you this because I got to try to find you here in a couple of weeks on Ouachita. Mm-hmm. Am I going to have to get, like, a chainsaw? Do I need to bring a chainsaw back to Ouachita?
There's a good chance we'll be in the tree somewhere, but I don't believe the lake is quite as low as we were last time.
Okay.
So there may not be quite so many trees sticking out the water.
Okay.
Like it was. Like the trees, like somebody around here that's been on our lakes is timber like Russell, essentially.
Yeah.
And that they, most, I think a lot of those are going to be underwater.
Okay. Because I needed the bulldozer blade to get to you last time.
Yeah, it was pretty, those trees were pretty thick. And I think I had a little snapshot on TV of me about falling in the water when I hit one of those trees. So it's pretty treacherous trying to fish through there.
If they're in deeper water, how are you going to fish it? Are you going to just fish the bases of those same trees you were fishing the bases of last time, just in a little deeper water? Or are you going to try to find something different?
Yeah, well, Ouachita is kind of there's like a million different things that could be going on. I mean, if you just look at the past cups there, I mean, I think there's been like three or four cups there.
Okay.
That I've only fished one, but prior to that, that lake, when we were there last time, it was really good. Like, you know, I was just burning down the bank, throwing top water, basically.
Yep.
I was in the trees, but I was essentially fishing the fish cruising the bank.
Right.
And that has played in the past, if you watch it, which I wasn't at the other tournament, so I don't know exactly what went down, but it's also a good, like, deep fishing, schooling fish type lake.
Okay.
And that could be a player. And there's actually, when we were there last time, there was a lot of grass in the lake. And it just wasn't really, the fish weren't in it last time. But I could see it being a big player, some of the grass out there, too. So it's really hard to say. It's one of those lakes where there's endless options of the way you could catch them. It's just,
gotcha. You got
to figure out what suits your style the best. I love the moving fast, topwater type fishing. But that could just not be a player this year like it was last year. So it'll take a couple of days to figure it out.
Yep. And you got how many days do y'all get? 3 days? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Yeah. I actually believe last year was the first year they changed the cup to a three-day event instead of a four-day.
Right.
And I believe because they got rid of the tournament day, we had 4 days of practice last year. You can't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure. So I think we'll have four this year.
That's enough time to whittle it down a little bit.
Yeah, that actually gets a little excessive. The lake like Wachita is pretty big, but when you start fishing 4 days, you find out kind of what you think you can do usually in a day or two, or at least I do.
Yeah.
And then I end up doing some kind of crazy stuff last 2 days, try to find something else. And you can kind of stumble on the wrong thing when you start doing that sometimes. You might find winning fish doing something different, but a lot of times you end up with options that you didn't really need when you stick to what you're good at.
Well, I know of course, Anthony didn't make the cut. I know Matt made it. And I told Matt the other day, I said, if I have to go back and watch you throw for those schooling fish down at the state park, I think I'll just step off on a boat somewhere.
Yeah, those schooling fish, they're super frustrating.
Oh, man.
It's not like our schooling fish around here. When they school around here, you catch them. Those out there are terrible.
They're up and down
look at them
so
for
quick.
Hours.
Yeah.
And they come up and go right back down, and then half the time when you land them, they don't even bite. So.
No, I mean, it was, oh, gosh, I got so tired of the state park, just sitting there waiting for them to come up. And like I said, they come up, and they don't stay up. They're just up and down, up and down, up and down.
And they don't come up in one place either. And that's kind of like what I was talking about earlier, the options at Wachita.
Yep.
Really, you essentially got like two not groups of fish necessarily, but two populations of fish. One roam around out there and eat shad, and one cruise the bank and eat brim. So you basically just got to figure out which one you like to do. I prefer the brim eating fish because, like you just talked, we just talked about the schooling fish.
Yeah.
They can be
very,
very frustrating. You can get right in a hurry quick when they're schooling, but.
Right, yeah.
Frustrating type fishing.
But they can come up every time. It seems like they come up 10 yards beyond your longest cast.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, last year, I didn't even know they were doing it. It's funny. I don't remember if it was you that told me or somebody else. I had a few people out there following me. And I was burning down the bank throwing the horny toad. And one of the boats following me told me, man, all day while you were burning down the bank, they were schooling around our boat.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no idea because I was up there on the bank.
That's it. That's when you need a pair of walkers game ears so you can hear them.
That's right. Yeah, they don't school violently out there either. They're more just running through bait, so they're not real easy to see.
Yeah, that's right. But they're fun to catch when you get on them.
But your trouble's getting ready to start.
The changes. 2019 is going to be a year of change on the FLW Tour. Before we get into the what if, what's, when's, where's, and why's, you like them or not?
I do like them. And I'm not one of those guys. Like the main rule I see that makes a big difference is like for the immediate year is the co-angler.
Right.
We lost co-anglers.
Right.
So they removed them from the tour. And I'm not one of those guys that can't stand the guy in the back of the boat, doesn't like fishing with a co-angler, you know.
Okay.
But I do agree on the professional trail. I don't think there should be co-anglers. I'm doing it for a living.
Right.
And prime example, and I'm not doing it because I've really never had co-anglers get in my way or not got along with any of them, anything like that. The prime reason I think there should not, it's a good move to remove co-anglers is, like certain tournaments I've been fishing, say I'm on a big grass flat throwing a chatterbait, right?
Right.
And I haven't caught anything in an hour or two. My co-angler picks up an 1/8-ounce trick worm on a spinning rod or something, and he starts catching them one after the other. Okay, well, if he hadn't been in the boat with me, obviously I'm going to switch to that trick worm and start catching them too. If he hadn't been in the boat, I would have never known that, and that affects the outcome of your day. And I don't think there should be outside influences from somebody in the back of the boat, because if my co-angler was not a skilled fisherman and hadn't figured that out, I would have never known.
See, I've never heard that from an FLW pro. That's an interesting take on it.
And that's just my thoughts on it. And a prime example this year, one tournament in specific this year, I was catching fish pretty good, shallow too. And this is one other instance is I was catching really good shallow. I had a pretty big bag, but I thought I could probably cull up a pound more, but I was going to have to weed through some fish to do it.
Okay.
Well, my co-angler was one of the best fishermen I've ever fished with as a co-angler, and he was catching as many fish as I was, maybe even more, just not as many quality fish. And I had to leave my area because I was sitting there thinking,
if I
catch two and he catches two, we just remove four fish for tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I actually had to leave when I probably could have caught up a pound more.
That's interesting.
So it's just instances like that.
That's an interesting take. I mean, everything you hear from the FLW, the guys on the tour is, you know, this is a professional sport. I shouldn't have to fish defensively against the guy in the back of the boat.
Yeah.
Which happens sometimes.
It does. It does. I mean, there's a few instances I've had on the tour with, you know, somebody that's a little aggressive and kind of getting my way a little bit. But I've really never had to deal with that much.
Okay.
But I've seen the influence a co-angler can have on the outcome of your day, whether it's good or bad.
Smaller field, down to 150. That's always a good thing.
Yeah, and I'm not sure the rule changes next year. I think there's some exemptions, so there will actually be a few more than 150.
Right. Yeah,
but they will weed them out. It'll kind of, like you said, within 2 years, it'll be down to a smaller field, which is good.
By 2020, it's 150 boats.
Yeah, and that's good because just like this year, with 180 boats, some of the lakes we go to just can't handle it.
No, you're right.
It just is difficult to fish. And like some of the biggest lakes we go to, places like Okeechobee, really, it's a humongous lake, but there's really only fish in a third of the lake. And when you got 180 boats fishing a third of the lake, it just gets... It turns a little bit into a luck type factor because you're sitting there with everybody else.
Well, and 180 boats and 360 fishermen too. That's the other thing.
That's right.
There's going to be a whole lot more fish in 2019 to be caught by the 180 guys that are out there than there were last year.
That's correct. Yeah, and there's no real way to measure it, but I believe you'll see like an average weight at certain lakes go up because of that. At least a second day weight.
Okay.
Because there'll be more fish left.
That's true. That's exactly right. Qualifications start in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Another big change. Top 100 pros from the 2018-2019, their average finish. Top 5 pros based on final point standing in the Costa Series. The 2019 TBF champion and All-American. So it's not going to be... After 2020, it won't be, I've got enough money for entry, I want to fish the FLW. That ought to make it a little more prestigious in and of itself, too.
It definitely will. Yeah, it'll definitely be more prestigious, which they've kind of, the restrictions have gotten more and more strict over the years, but it's still been a lot of people get in without prior, not necessarily, I'm not people that shouldn't be on the tour, not saying they're bad fishermen, just people without. There's no reason for them to be on.
Yeah.
And they haven't fished a lot of FLW events in the past. So I think it's definitely good to get a little more strict and give some more people opportunity to get some people out that may have been doing a while and just haven't done so well and get some people in and give them new faces and new opportunities.
You know, I knew I should have gone to St. Clair this year. I should have sold something and gone.
Right. That's right. I forgot you were thinking about fishing co-angler in that one. You should have done it.
I should have done it. That's a chance lost forever. Oh, well. I did get to fish once. I learned a heck of a lot in those 2 days. I mean, just in a wealth of information in just 2 days.
And you still got, as far as people out there still want to do the co-angler, it's just removed from the tour. So
that's
you
right.
still have the Coast Series and BFLs. Plenty of options still.
Yeah. And what a lot of people don't realize is that it's a pathway to the cup through the co-angler went away in 2015.
That's right.
So there's no path to the cup or the tour on the co-angler side from 2016 on because of the elimination of the championship.
That's right. Yeah. The co-angler side, they were essentially that they thought with a purse, it was the way to get co-anglers for marshals. And they just, like, there really was no incentive for a co-angler fish the whole year, and I think it was getting kind of difficult to get co-anglers for the whole year.
Yep. Marshals might get to cash in a little money next year. That'll be interesting. I'll let people read that one for themselves. Okay, 2019 schedule. Sam Rayburn, Texas, Toho, Kissimmee, Seminole, Grove, Grand Lake, Cherokee Lake, Lake Chick, Champlain. Anything there you really like or really don't like?
I like the schedule I'm pretty happy with it next year. The only thing is I'm not a huge sight fisherman. I mean, I can do it, but it's not my favorite thing to do. And looking at the schedule, it's very probable that we will have
how many?
4 to 5 tournaments that are Memphis.
I was just fixing to say.
Yeah, it could happen. I mean, you never know. It could be right before it or after it where the Best Bites postponed in some of them. But it's going to be very, very close. You're going to see people like John Cox have a great year next year that they love to sight fish, and that's their forte. And I've made a lot of money doing it over the years. And actually, that's one thing, going back to the co-angler thing.
Yeah.
The bed fishing tournaments, it'll be a lot more comfortable without having co-anglers.
Absolutely.
Because that was one of my problems before is, yeah, I'm doing it for a living, but I still hate it for the guy in the back when I'm sitting there power pulled down trying to snatch a bed fish.
45 minutes, and he's got nothing to do. Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be a lot better. It'll be a little less something in the back of your mind while you're sitting there fishing for one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Sam Rayburn, Toho, Seminole, Grand Lake, Cherokee, they could all be very close to that spawn depending on how cold a winter we have.
They could be. Rayburn, I'm pretty confident it'll be pretty well pre-spawned.
Okay.
It could be actually snowing. I mean, it could be cold at Rayburn. It gets
pretty
cold down there.
Yep, you're right.
But from that point on, there's Toho could be bed fishing for sure. And as far as from a fan base standpoint, there's going to be a lot of weight caught next year. It'll be slugfest type tournaments. Not necessarily the lakes we're going to are huge fish lakes all for the most part, but you'll see the biggest weights of the year off those lakes on the tour tournament. Scheduled real great for catching fish.
Be a fun year.
It will be. It will be a fun year. I'm looking forward to it.
Very good. Well, let's see. We just got a little over, 3 weeks to the Cup? 2 weeks till you guys really leave.
That's right. 2 weeks and be heading to Wachita, Arkansas.
Gonna be fun to catch up. You know, you're gonna be like target number one. I really don't have anybody else to go see.
Well, you're usually pretty good luck. I think the one time you followed me at Lanier this year, I caught a pretty good one.
We have a streak going of whenever I show up at a tournament and I actually sitting there watching you, you tend to catch some fish. So
I think Lanier was hitting. It was hit or miss there for a little while. It was questionable.
Yep, but you pulled it out.
Then,
you pulled it off.
I did. I captured one finally.
Well, maybe
I looked like an Eskimo out there. You couldn't hardly tell it was me in the picture. It was so cold.
It was cold.
But I did catch one and get some pictures.
Yes, yeah, we have it on record that the streak is alive. So maybe we're looking forward to keeping that streak alive on Wachita here in the next few weeks. So anyway, buddy, it's always fun to have you on. Have a good time. Appreciate you doing it. And look forward to catching up with you soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, and I will see you at Wachita.
Good enough, bud. See you later. Song for the brokenhearted. If you're brokenhearted that you didn't go to ICAST with me and see all the new fish and tackle that's out there, life's not fair. No, if you didn't, look, ICAST was a blast. I think we touched on it just for a minute or two last week. There were 950 new fishing items in the new product showcase. 650 different booths there. I think it was up 45 or 46 from last year. All I'm going to say about that is that I've got Dave Rush from Somerville. He's got a Z3 Media and does a lot of stuff at Bass Fan, I think is his website. Dave's going to come up. We're going to do a best of together. We're going to talk about some of the things he's got going on. You know, we start throwing all these ideas out. I told him he's going to have to stay a couple of days and come back a couple of Saturdays. But anyway, we're going to get to a lot of the ICAST stuff, kind of tell you what the best of was, some of the things he liked, some things I liked. Going to talk about some bass stuff, some FLW stuff, just fishing in general. So Dave Rush is going to come up from Somerville and hang out with me for a Saturday. We'll do that. I don't know how much I want to. I will tell you, Garmin Panoptix Live Scope, won Best of Show. It's goodness gracious, it's amazing what Marine Electronics, where they have gotten. You know, Garmin came out a couple years ago with Panoptics, and man, it was kind of weird to get used to. I mean, you could throw out a top water plug, and as you worked it across the bay, top of the water, you could see it on the top, and then you could see fish coming up from the bottom after it. I mean, it was just really cool. So LiveScope is taking that one step further, where you can actually look into a tree, and it's animated. It's pretty cool. Anyway, AFCO, got some news from AFCO, American Fishing Tackle Company. They are officially going to be the closed sponsor of Woods and Water South Carolina on the fishing side. Got some really cool stuff coming out. We've been talking for a couple of years on and off, and I guess back before the Classic, we decided exactly what we were going to do, and so now they're on. Their Aquanaut rain suit. Made the best of category. They had 25 categories. Theirs made the best of as far as technical clothing, I think is what it was. So that's all I'm going to say about ICAST and fishing, because we'll catch up with that. I mentioned the link between ADHD and digital media. This is out of by Bradford Bell's July 19th, Fox News. A study released Tuesday by the Journal of American Medical Association suggests a direct relationship between A study released Tuesday by the Journal of the American Medical Association suggests a direct relationship between computer screen time among teens and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which when I was a kid was just called being a boy. The two-year study looked at a group of more than 2,500 high school students from L.A. whose ability to pay attention waned as they became increasingly involved in digital media platforms over the duration of the experiment. I'm having a tough time today. For every notch a teen's digital engagement rose, their reported ADHD symptoms rose by 10%. Now, I don't know what notch they're measuring against the study. While significant digital media usage does not definitively cause ADHD, it does seem to induce symptoms that would warrant such a diagnosis or, which is the bigger problem, pharmaceutical treatment. ADHD has long been thought to begin in the early stages of childhood development, but the exact circumstances, whether biological or brought on by one's environment, are still debated among mental health professionals. So anyway, my brother says if they'd had ADHD medicine when he was growing up, he'd have been like a druggie. But we were just boys, you know. That's what they called us back then. I was leafing through something. You know, we always talk about conservation funding, and I'm just really rambling all over the place today. There's a bill that's been introduced in the House, Recovering America's Wildlife Act, a 21st century model wildlife conservation funding. There have been some big movements on the fishing side, too. But it was in here that I was just reading through this. And it was talking about funding. You know, introduced by Representatives Debbie Dingell, Democrat from Michigan, and Jeff Fortenberry, Republican of Nebraska, in late 2017, would provide $1.3 billion in dedicated annual funding to state fish and wildlife agencies. The next sentence is what caught my eye. The funding would largely go toward conserving and monitoring state-identified at-risk species known as species of great conservation need. The dedicated funds would come from revenue generated by, get this, oil, gas, and offshore mineral royalties currently collected by the federal government at about $7 to $12 billion annually. So when you talk about funding, who's going to pony up if we don't have an act like this and we don't have royalties from mineral and gas rights on federal land? Where's that money come from? You know, who funds conservation wildlife funding if there's not that money? So you've got, I know you out west and off the coast. Oh, we're not going to drill off the coast of South Carolina. I mean, hey, Louisiana's got it, and they got some of the best fishing ever. You know, Alabama's got the same thing. Go off some of those wrecks or oil rigs off of Alabama and look at how many red snapper they've got out there. All sorts of species. So It does go hand in hand. It can be beneficial for both the energy needs of our country and the wildlife needs of our country, you know? So, again, funding question, always out there. Speaking of funding, Crab Bank in Charleston Harbor is practically gone. I haven't been out of Shem Creek in a couple of years now. I did not realize, but it has degraded to nothing more than a small sandbar from what used to be, I don't know what, 80 acres is what it used to be. I didn't know it was that big. Well, I knew it was big. I didn't know it was quite that big. Anyway, SCDNR launches $2 million public-private fundraising project to protect threatened coastal birds. June 28th from DNR News, coastal bird populations face multiple threats, including habitat loss and degradation. You could say habitat loss affects more than just coastal birds. Human disturbance, increased predation, and sea level rise, maybe. In fact, their populations have declined by 70% during the last 40 to 60 years. South Carolina is a critical link in preserving these birds. Numerous species of nesting and migratory birds visit our coastline each year, including a remarkable 38% of all nesting brown pelicans on the East Coast. And some of the largest colonies of skimmers and terns in the southeast. To help address these threats, the SCDNR has established the South Carolina Coastal Bird Conservation Program, supported by groups including the Audubon Society of South Carolina, Coastal Expeditions, South Carolina Coastal Conservation League, and the South Carolina Wildlife Federation. The program's first project will be to raise approximately $2 million needed to take advantage of a cost-share opportunity to re-nourish the Crab Bank Seabird Sanctuary in Charleston Harbor. And like I said, if you're not familiar with it, everybody knows where Shem Creek is. When you run out of Shem Creek, if you don't turn right or you don't turn left, you'll run into Crab Bank. In fact, if you turn right, you better know where you're going because there's some big sandbars coming out from the golf course side of the harbor. And at low tide, you best know where that channel is. At low tide, you don't. You'll be sitting there until high tide. Crab Bank, owned by SCDNR, has been nationally recognized as an Audubon important bird area. In the past, Crab Bank has provided nesting habitat for as many as 5,000 birds in a single nesting season, including large colonies of brown pelicans, terns, black skimmers, egrets, and herons, and a few dozen American oyster catchers. Due to wave erosion and Hurricane Irma in 2017, all the available nesting habitat on Crab Bank was washed away, removing any opportunity for nesting birds during the 2018 season. I know when I was down there a few weeks ago, looked out the end of Shem Creek, and it was gone. I mean, it's just, I'm trying to remember what, we were at rising tide, so probably two-thirds tide, and there was just a little bit of sand showing above. It was really amazing how long it's going. Anyway, a long-awaited dredging project to deepen the federal channel in Charleston Harbor holds the key to saving Crab Bank. Overseen by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the post-45 Charleston Harbor deepening project is expected to reach areas of the lower harbor beginning in 2019, giving the Coastal Bird Conservation Program until December of 2018 to raise the funds needed to help cost share the renourishment of Crab Bank with the dredge material from the deepening project. So they're just going to take what's washed away and put it back. As many as 80 acres could be restored, which could provide 28 acres of upland habitat for nesting and loafing coastal birds. Crab Bank, if re-nourished, can produce hundreds of thousands of young birds over the next 50 years, said DNR biologist Felicia Saunders. And, yeah, it's an economic thing. All the paddle boarders and kayakers coming out of Shem Creek, you know, birding is a big deal. And it's a tourist thing. So, pretty cool. Yep. Crab Bank, practically gone. Hey, for you deer hunters, I think I got time to get ways to conceal movement while hunting. And we're getting ready to get into the deer season. New research out of the University of Georgia Deer Lab is providing unique insight into the rate of which white-tailed deer process visual images and how they perceive their environment. It appears that deer actually receive visual information at a much higher rate than we do, making them more sensitive to movement. Any movement to them will appear to be in slow motion, which, of course, allows them to react more quickly. That's a crafty boogers, aren't they? And while this finding is true at all times of the day, it is at sunrise and sunset when the difference is greatest, four times greater than humans. The period when deer are most active, when hunters are most likely trying to outsmart them on their morning and evening hunts. Now that you know deer see us through their own kind of slow-mo app, you're likely thinking two things. Well, that stinks. And two, you're vividly remembering that buck you shot at and missed last bow season because he jumped the string. Sorry to bring up bad memories. That's pretty good by Matt Ross. He's a QDMA guy. although you can't do much about making your weapon of choice shoot faster, let's discuss some ways that can help consider your movement to, from, and while in the stand for preparation for that moment of truth. Traveling, screening in process. For the tree stands, much has been written about this topic in the popular hunting press, but it works. Whether you plant a screen of trees, warm season grasses, or annual crops, hinge cut, or whatever, produce a screen to block your movement going to and from your stand. A dead-end trail is a great one. The terrain chain, use topography. While it influences deer movement and all that, let it influence your movement. Don't walk the edge of a field when you can walk, back a little bit in a ditch behind some trees. Clear a path through it. Let's see. Own stand. Box your... Go around full. This should probably go without saying, but avoid the places deer want to be at, the times when they want to be there. For goodness sake, don't walk straight through you across your highly attractive food plot where you know they're likely feeding and hope to put an arrow and a deer in the same spot on the morning sit. May take some extra planning and time to get in and out of your sets, but it will be worth the extra 10 minutes of walking or parking in an unusual spot when you can text your buddies that coveted hero shot. So that's just one of them. That's just getting in and out of the stand. There's a couple more here that we'll cover in the next few weeks. Deer season is coming. Oh, hey. Well, I'll get to that next time around. They got some news on Coyote. I just got more information I can get to. But, hey, another show in the books. Appreciate you listening. For those of you who didn't win Black Rifle Coffee last weekend, there could be some more opportunities there. Got a little conversation going with Black Rifle. We'll see if we can't get some more coffee out of them. I know I need some right now. Anyway, have a great week. As always, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget that camera. See you back with more Woods and Water, South Carolina, next Saturday. Hit me from so high. Yes, I'm